So, Frederick, first of all, thank you so much for joining us again for one of these calls. You've been
quite generous
with your time. I think most people are familiar with who you are and your work, but I'm going to give you a quick introduction for those of you on the call who may not yet be aware of who you are.
Sure.
So, Dr. Schroyens is a medical doctor who has been practicing medicine and homeopathy for almost 30 years. He graduated from the State University of Ghent in 1977, and then he graduated 1 year later from the homeopathic training course at the Faculty for Homeopathy in London, and that was in 1978. He was the constitutive president of VSU, which is the largest homeopathic school in Belgium. He was very much instrumental in the original creation of that school. He also founded the MASI workshops in both Belgium and Holland. And more recently, he's been the editor of Synthesis, which he's been doing for over 10 years now. He was also the main link between George Vatolkas and the programming team at Radar. And he also traveled around with George, assisting him during his seminars for quite a number of years. He's a very talented homeopath and educator, and most recently he's been traveling around the world. He's been invited to teach at a number of different schools pretty much all over the world. He's recently been to India. He just returned from South Africa, and he will be coming to the United States and Canada October 21st and 22nd in New York, October 28th and 29th in Portland, and then he's going to be the keynote speaker November 3rd at the AVH conference in Monterey, California. If anybody wants any more information about any of Dr. Schroyens' seminars or the events that he'll be participating in, either in the United States or in Canada, they can contact Whole Health Now. And the phone number they can reach the person who's in charge of these seminars, that number is 760-727-7090. That's 760-727-7090. Frederick, again, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yes. So one little correction, if I may, Kim.
Sure, please, Frederick.
So the work on Synthesis is, in fact, going on for almost 20 years.
20 years. Thank you for that correction.
And is it true? I don't have a calendar here, but Monterey is on the 4th, I think, not
November
on the 3rd.
November 4th. Thank you. I just got that information this morning, and I wasn't sure if it was correct, so thank you.
Anyway.
Any case, if you call that 760-727-7090, Diana will definitely have the correct information and will be able to help anybody out who'd like to know more about it.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Frederick, you had suggested that we talk a little bit about your seminars, the nature of the subject that you're going to be talking about, which has a lot to do with the language of the patient. And
yes.
I've heard you speaking about this concept of evoking questions.
Yes.
So could you give us a little bit of sense about what that's all about? Because Hahnemann pretty much says that, you know, when you get stuck, you just ask the patient to, you know, tell them what else or what else is going on. How does this contrast with the work that you're doing?
Yes. I would like to clarify that first as you bring it up, because evoking questions, of course, it sounds like I will now speak about all the possible questions you can ask a patient, which is correct, but it would be wrong if I just start enumerating those questions and explaining some kind of schedule without a little introduction.
Okay.
And so the fact is that Hahnemann has said that, yes, the main homeopathic question, the homeopathic question with the big Q, is in fact what else? Because in the homeopathic consultations, we want to go where the patient is leading us, and we don't want to push the patient in any direction where we believe that the patient should go. And in fact, Hahnemann has been kind of the inventor of non-directive psychotherapy or of communication techniques way before that ever was invented by Rogers and other people.
Sure.
And so it is definitely true that the the typical homeopathic case taking is non-directive, and that the key question, and when I say evoking questions, well, the first question that should be evoked and that should be asked the patient is what else? And even to that, being precise on that, I must go one step backwards. That is that before asking that question, what else, or even before asking any other question, that there is another interrogation technique which stands out and which is also laid out by Hahnemann himself, which is to not ask a question, in fact, to let the patient speak, and as Hahnemann has termed it, to not interrupt. And this sounds very basic, but it is very essential, and we tend to not consider that, and to go to the patient and to ask questions, and even to say what else you can say about this and that, and then to direct the patient. So please, be sure, understand, that when I will now speak about evoking questions, that this is like a step further, and that the first step is in fact not asking questions, the second step is to ask the question what else, and then maybe at some later stage we need to come up with some questions. So I am not saying that what I will be explaining during this half hour or a bit more is the start for the homeopathic consultation. It is in fact a further step which in some cases may even not be needed. But in case it may be needed, I feel there is a, it's relevant to consider a few items, a few reflections on this. And this is what I would like to focus on. So has this been clarified, that how I would like to speak about evoking questions, yet fully understanding that the homeopathic way is not to ask questions even in the interrogation, okay?
Yeah, I think that's clear for me, Frederick, and it's kind of what Hahnemann describes anyway. He kind of says, you know, at the beginning, you know, just let the patient speak as freely, as openly as possible, and then later on in the process you can kind of clarify some of the answers that have been
generated. Yes, yes.
So, yeah, so I think hopefully, yeah, most people probably are familiar with that, but thank you for that clarification.
Okay, fine. So then the first person, in fact, who has been reflecting about the questions we may need to ask, the information we may want to know, has been Bernhardshausen. And it's true that as homeopaths there is some typical information we would like to know. And like if you do a murder investigation, you want to know about the weapon, you want to know about the motive, etc., the connection with the person who was killed. There is some type of information you like to know for a murder investigator. And if you have another profession, there is some other type of information which you would like to know. And so when you are a homeopath, there is some type of information you like to know. And what has Bernhardshausen been telling us? Well, he has been saying that we like to know the location of the complaint. We like to know the sensation, and we like to know the modality, by what is it modified, by what is the complaint modified. And then if we have this information about the complaint, we are very happy. Okay? Then it makes our information homeopathically interesting. Hmm? So this is the first reply that has been given in the history of homeopathy to this topic. Which are the questions we want to evoke? We want to evoke localization, sensation, and modality. Then Bernhardshausen has also been speaking about the so-called concomitants. Now, the concomitants, okay, meaning a symptom appearing with another, is another information which is very interesting homeopathically, because it means that not one thing, but two things are happening in the body, that the derangement of the vital force, as we call it among us, is hitting the energy, the human being, not just on one place, but on two places. It's getting a cold, and then something else is coming up. This is a concomitant. And it's interesting, it's very interesting, because when we try to find the remedy which is corresponding to both of these places where the energy is hitting us, the disease-making energy is hitting us, we have a better chance to find the remedy. So this is the importance of a concomitant. Now, there is a little clarification I would like to give about concomitants. And this, say, we speak about the cold. Now, someone says, I have a runny nose, and I have watery eyes. Okay? Now, is that a concomitant? Yes, if we look at the definition I just gave, it's one symptom which appears along with the other symptom. So it seems that there's always concomitants. There's always a lot of concomitants, because very seldom just one symptom appears. In an acute situation, and for sure in a chronic, there's many symptoms appearing. So if we reflect again about this whole situation of concomitants, it's a bit puzzling. So why is this homeopathically interesting? Because it's happening all the time. And we're having watery eyes and tears running from the eyes and discharge running from the nose. And then we have a cough coming up. It's another concomitant symptom. No. This is not exactly the meaning of concomitant symptom. And I believe this is one clarification we may need, because it's often taken as such that too many symptoms are considered as concomitant symptoms. So when is the symptom concomitant and when is it not concomitant? Well, the element we need to bring in to understand this is the element, the so-called paragraph 153. It needs to be peculiar. So if I have a cold and the patient is telling me, I'm sneezing and I have this runny nose, and yes, I also have these tears from the eyes. It is symptoms appearing at the same time, yes. But it is not the relevant, fantastic, interesting concomitant we're looking for. The fantastic concomitant we're looking for would be that at the same time that this cold has appeared, there is a symptom, mental, general, physical, whatever, that has come up, which is not expected within the normal evolution of the pathology. That is a concomitant. Okay? So I have a cold, like I have many colds, and like many people have colds, but now I start having this shortness of breath. I'm not asthmatic. I never was asthmatic. I never had the problem breathing. But I had this cold, now just this cold, like I had a few colds before, but the different thing is that now I am short of breath. And for me, this is peculiar, because I don't have an asthmatic background. It would not be peculiar if I have an asthmatic background, of course. But for me, all the colds I had, they develop in a certain way. This cold now is different because I have this shortness of breath. So that is a concomitant, because it is not automatically part of the pathology colds. Rhinitis, whatever you want to call it. So a concomitant is interesting if it has a certain level of peculiarity. And otherwise, it is not a concomitant even. It's just symptoms appear together anyway. So we shouldn't worry about a symptom being alone or two or three or four or five. No. We should say, oh, it is strange, it is peculiar that this symptom appears with the others, if there is a certain level of peculiarity. So if I have, let's say, I have an indigestion, I have stomach problems, they come up, and then I see that along with the stomach problems, I start having a vertigo. I say, oh, wow, this is strange, because vertigo isn't for everybody. All the people I know who have stomach upsets and indigestion problems, not all the people I know, they have vertigo. It is kind of peculiar. So this is a concomitant which may be relevant. This is a very important understanding, because in our materia medicas, the lack of this understanding has created a lot of wrong information. And you will read in many books, in many materia medicas, that there is written like patient has this symptom and this symptom, or that symptom and that symptom. They are presented as if concomitant, but it's just symptoms of the same pathology. It's just, it's not relevant, it's not peculiar. It's only relevant and striking for us if it is a certain level of peculiarity. So this is about concomitance. Don't think about concomitance without considering the level of peculiarity it has.
Thank you for that clarification about concomitance. I think that's really quite helpful that people understand when a symptom really is a concomitant and when it's not, especially since concomitants are oftentimes so important for helping us select a good remedy choice. You know, Frederick, one of the things that's become very, very in vogue these days with regards to location, sensation, concomitant modality is the sensations. There's actually a whole school of homeopathy in Bombay that is focusing almost exclusively on the sensation for finding the correct remedy. And I'm just curious, for you, do you find the sensation to be as reliable as some of these other qualifications? And the reason I ask is because in my own mind, when I think of sensation, I think of just all the different ways that a sensation could be described, and depending on the country you're in or the culture or the social class, you know, somebody says stabbing or shooting or stitching, and, you know, how do we know that they mean what they... So I'm curious, how do you treat the situation? I know that you've made some changes in synthesis with regard to sensation. I was curious if that had anything to do with that restructuring. So could you just kind of give us a sense of how important you think sensation is? And
Yes. But there is one clarification I must give first. So sensation has two meanings.
Yeah.
First of all, there is a sensation which I would like to define as the description of the pain, which is stitching and burning and tearing and cramping and whatever you like to say. And this is in fact also what Bönninghausen means, is burning here and stitching there, etc. And then there is sensation which are more in the sense of sensations as if, like I have a sensation that my nose is too long, or that I have three legs, or that my head is swollen, or whatever, or some more mental sensations, that I have people following me, or, more mental sensations, so to say. And so you have the more physical sensation, describing the pain or the painful sensation, and you have the more mental sensation. So we must distinguish this. And so when Bönninghausen has been saying that this sensation is a very interesting bit of information, then he was meaning the first one, the physical one. So if someone is speaking about it, says, I have a problem in my head, blah, 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 you listen to hear, yes, head, okay, so I know where it is, but what is happening in the head? Is it a pulsation, a stitching, a burning, etc.? What is happening in the head? Is a sensation. So this is what Bönninghausen means, You have a localization and a sensation. I have a stitching in my left temple. Okay, this is localization and sensation. The one other thing Bönninghausen would like to know is there a modality? Like, do I have this stitching in my left temple when I am using the mobile phone, telephoning you guys down there in the United States, wherever in the world? Or do I have it after I was drinking some Puyifeme wine, etc.? So the modality. So when, more recently, it has been suggested by a number of people that sensation is very important, then this was the more broad meaning of sensation, both of them. Okay? Now, what is my opinion? Well, this can be interesting, yes, but the only thing that works in my practice is really to go where the patient is leading me. And so if I am looking at a patient, and just to give another example, I believe that causation is the one and only important feature in homeopathy. And I'm sitting there, and so I don't hear a causation, and I start asking questions about the causation, and I say, no, this must have come on after something happened. What happened in the beginning? What happened the day before this rheumatism started? what happened the month before this rheumatism started? Have you been on a holiday? What was your situation in your life? And please tell me about your work when this rheumatism started. There must be a causation. You see, pushing patients to a place where maybe there is no information at all. And like in a criminal investigation, if you bore the people too long, they may come up with some wishful information and they will tell you, yes, I had some problems with my father. He was not very healthy and I was very worried about his health, etc. There, I have a causation. And now I can prescribe for my case because finally I have a causation. But I believe this is a very wrong approach because you push a certain information forward. And that's why I believe that these two ideas of Hahnemann, don't interrupt the patient and first of all ask 125 times, what else? This is really, if you can just remember this, this is really leading you to the art of interrogation better than anything else. And so if we start up, no, we must find causation, now we must find sensation, now we must find whatever. Hey, we must find mental symptoms. We must not find mental symptoms. We must find local symptoms. And no, nothing is good enough. I want to have general symptoms. All these preconceived ideas, I feel they may lead us away from finding what is important for this patient and thereby finding the key for the remedy which helps him. Okay?
Very good. So, Frederick, with regards to this... these qualifications that Benninghausen talked about, the location, the sensation, the modalities, are there certain questions that you use to elicit this information? Can you give us an example of exactly how you go about questioning the patient to make sure you've got the qualifications that you need?
So, a symptom or any homeopathic information is interesting if we have localization, sensation, and modality. Basically, this is what Benninghausen is saying. Eh? So, if we have this idea in our mind, and we listen to a patient who's speaking about a headache, and he doesn't speak the whole story, and he gets stuck, and we say, what else, and he doesn't go on, then we know we have to ask, and by what is it influenced? We know what we have to ask, and where precisely do you feel the pain in the head? So this is a very interesting idea, localization, sensation, modality. Of course, it wouldn't be the topic of a whole speech to just remind you that the questions you have to evoke is localization, sensation, and modality, okay? And this is only the first person who has been addressing how to qualify the homeopathic information. Very important, nevertheless. Because you know that Benninghausen has said, these are the criteria to define a complete symptom. If we have these three, about a headache, a stomach pain, a back pain, whatever, if we have these three, we have a complete symptom. And if among all the symptoms you're looking at, you look mostly at the complete symptoms, we'll have a more secure way finding remedy. This is the idea, okay? Now, apart from Benninghausen, I would like to remind you that another person has done a big work to qualify homeopathic information. To qualify, I mean by that to say this type of information is important, like the weapon, the motive, etc. in murder investigation. And that person has been Kent, in the conception of the structure of his repertory. You may not be aware of that, but there is a very precise way whereby he qualifies information, and that way is used to structure his repertory. The key word there is smelt. A little bit strange word. I spell it S-T-M-E-L-D. S for sides, T for times, M for modalities, E for extensions, L for localizations, and D for descriptions of pain. So you have six different types, and all the symptoms that he has been integrating in his repertory have been broken into pieces and qualified along either of these six qualifications. This is basically the vision he had to structure his repertory. Now, first of all, what I would like to say, if we have six different qualifiers in this case, and we had three qualifiers for Berninghausen, then there is still quite a correspondency, because if we think of a site, the site of a symptom, left or right, it is a type of localization. You see what I mean? If we think of a time, when the symptom happens, it is a type of modality. By what is the complaint brought on? It is brought on because of the happening at a certain time. Then, yes, the modality is exactly the same as Berninghausen. Then we have the localizations, the extensions. Extension is from one localization to another. That is another localization. It's two localizations almost. Then we have the STME, the localizations, and the descriptions of pain in the end. This corresponds to the sensations of pain, of course. So if you look at it, you see that Kent six ways to define a homeopathic information are in fact very close to what Berninghausen has been saying. Okay? So the topic is still, which questions do we need to evoke when a patient needs questions?
Very good.
And so the first idea was localization, sensation, modality of Berninghausen. Mm-hmm. Okay? The second idea is STMELD from Kent, which is, in a way, an extended Berninghausen, as I just explained. Mm. Okay? Now, I will go a bit into detail on several of those items, because I believe it's important to be aware of a few aspects for each of them.
Okay.
So, Kent has taken apart the site out of the localization. And I think that is truly a very interesting aspect, because we know that certain remedies have a tendency to affect more the left than the right. Like everybody knows, throat pain to the right is maybe more like a podium, throat pain to the left is maybe more like a this.
Right.
But if you're thinking of mercury, you should be aware that the right side of throat pain is more Mercurius Iodatus Flavus, and the left side is more Mercurius Iodatus Ruber. So it's very interesting to know about the site. Be careful with the site, assessing the site as an important information, because everything is happening either left or right. You just have a 50% chance.
Sure.
So you need to be aware, before you base yourself on the site information, that you need to see it a few times. Now, the second part is the times of the day as a special modality. Okay. Also, that is very interesting. If someone says, I have nausea at 11 p.m., okay, that's very precise information. Or I have a stitching pain in the rectum at 9 a.m., etc., etc. That's very interesting information. May be relevant, but will be especially relevant if it is repeatedly at that time. And if not, it may be more vague. It may be the part of the day that is important. Like nux vomica has especially symptoms in the morning. More the morning. Not precise the time on the watch, on the clock, but the time of the day. And therefore, I would like to be precise and explain to you the hours, the homeopathic hours, so to say. You will find this information in the chapter Generals, where the different times of the day are described. And when we speak about afternoon, we in Europe, I guess most of you in the United States, have a different opinion than speaking about the afternoon for the, let's say, Brazilian friends. And so when we speak about the afternoon, we need to be precise and to know what is meant homeopathically.
And the only way to understand each other there is to be aware of the times that correspond. So when we were creating the repertory, we have done a research in the original writings of Hanuman for the words morning, noon, forenoon, evening, night, etc., and just related those words to times on the watch. And so the times that are now used in synthesis all over corresponds to this. And it may be interesting for you to know it. So the morning, in fact, it starts at 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. This is the morning, okay? Then the forenoon goes from 9 to 12. Noontime is 12, but a little bit more, 12 to 1 p.m. And then the afternoon goes from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. And then the evening from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. So theoretically, this should be the time you go to bed, because the night then starts and goes from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m., which is the 8 hours, as you know. And so times all over are divided like this throughout the repertory and should be understood like this as well. So the modalities I will say more later. Then about the extensions. Yes, the extensions, I have two or three remarks to make. I think it is interesting because if someone says I have a pain at a certain place, that's fine. But if he says again and again that pain is extending to that other place, localization, that is even more interesting. So it makes sense to consider extensions as a possibly interesting information or question. Yes, it does. Now, the first point is that sometimes the symptoms were described in a rather odd way. Like you have this pain which is going from the anus to the urethra. You understand? From the anus to the urethra. And if you look for this symptom in the original repertory of Kent, you can check this if you like while I speak. You will find it under urethra, in the chapter urethra, pain extending to anus, but then you have a sub-rubric which says from anus through urethra. So in fact, the standardization, which is one big job we have done in the repertory all through, making many things similar or more or less the same, for this part has meant that extensions are always written from beginning to ending. And so this symptom, which begins in anus and goes to urethra, is now rectum pain anus extending to urethra. This is the place where you will find it in the repertory nowadays. Okay? And I think this is the way we should think about it. We have pain from the stomach, which is going to the back. But we have also a back pain which is extending to the stomach, and they may not be the same remedies, okay? Because the one remedy has affinity for stomach, and the other remedy has affinity for backaches, spine, etc. So this is about extensions. Then we have the other element of extensions, which is inward, outward, etc. So there is a pain which is described as pressing inward. In the eyes, pressing inward. Okay, we have started since synthesis 9.1 to put all such extensions of pain immediately under pressing. Okay? So you will find eye pain pressing inward, eye pain pressing outward, and not eye pain pressing extending inward. Because in this case, it is not really a true extension. I would like to clarify that it is a kind of description of the pain. And when the patient tells me the pain in the eyes is like my eyes are being pressed inward, it's a description of pain. It's just pressing inward. And if we just put it like this in our books, in our repertories, Materia Medica, we'll be much closer to the spoken language, which is, of course, always the goal. The most interesting extension is the real one, where one pain goes to another localization. Like you have a pain in the eye, and it goes to the teeth. This is really I don't hear this all the time. Someone says, I have a pain in the eye, and it goes to my teeth, to my teeth. Oh, wow. And this is an argument for chelidonium then. So extension, yes, we evoke that question about extension of pain in addition to localization in general. Now, localization in general, first Bönninghausen has been saying, Kent has been more precise again there and has told us there are three types of localization that are interesting for us. Type one is the precise anatomical localization. So this should correspond to the anatomical names in Latin or whatever that you have been studying in your anatomy courses, like the patella of the knee. It's just right there that I feel the pain. But be aware that homeopathically we are still interested in two other types of localization. And the one is the second one is the region. Like you may have someone relates the pain to the knee, not in the knee, but somewhere around the knee. And these regions then are always part of a localization, like above the knee is part of the thigh, and below the knee then will be part of the legs. It's a region. Yes, if someone cannot describe with precision the localization, no problem. We have remedies that are directed for the region. And even if a person cannot describe precise anatomical localization and neither region, he may be able to say, my tendons here, my tendons there, my tendons all over. And then we have remedies and rubrics that go for what is called the tissue. This is the third localization, tissues. It may be more general, like tendons, or it may be that it is because of several localizations, like small joints. And just to mix in a little hint to make you aware of the repertory language, these more general localizations, you will find them either as a subrubric of pain or as a subrubric of inflammation. To be precise, for the examples I just gave, when you look for remedies that have an affinity for tendons, you go to general inflammation tendons. When you look for remedies that have an affinity for the small joints, you go to extremities, because the small joints, that's the fingers and the toes, they belong to extremities. So in extremities, you find pain in the joints, and then you have a subrubric, small joints, with a number of remedies, such as Actia spicata, etc. So this is the more precise way to describe and evoke questions about localizations according to Kent. Now, descriptions of pain. Okay, these correspond to the sensations, the painful sensations of Bönninghausen. So that's a clear correspondency. The only thing that you should be aware of, if you look at the repertory, you want to find rubrics in the repertory, is that every painful sensation in the repertory has been put on the pain. So what happens? You may come up with this patient, and he's telling you, okay, I have this pressure in my ears, and yes, it hurts me, and it is especially, and then he sees that you're looking at pain, ear, pain pressing. He says, no. It's not a pain, it's just a pressure. And you start looking in your repertory and you don't find a rubric ear pressing. No, don't find it. No. Because even if the patient is telling you very clearly, it's not a pain, it is enough close to painful sensation for it to be under pain. In the repertory, this pressure, which he says, it's not a pain, it's just a pressure, it will be under pain pressing. So in the repertory, all the painful sensations are under pain. And if you look for a correspondency between Bönninghausen repertory and Kent repertory, you will see that in Bönninghausen very often, you just have eyes burning in the open air, nose tearing, when sneezing, etc. You don't have the word pain. the corresponding rubrics of all these in Kantian style of repertory, they are with eye pain, burning, or nose pain, tearing. So this is important to find rubrics, of course. Now, I have elaborated a little bit on the sides, times, extensions, and localizations. And the one other thing I would like to do is to expand on the modalities.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yes. So, modalities, there is, of course, many hundreds of modalities. And the whole scope of, in fact, my speech here is to help you get a system where you can remember very easily, oh, I must think of this, I must ask this, I may ask these questions. And so I cannot give you a list of hundreds of questions. Modalities is especially the problem, because the other one side is just left, right, one side alternating, it's easy. Times is just 6 or 7 times in the day, it's done, you know, 24 hours in the night and the day, it's done. But modalities, you have hundreds. So what I have done for my practice, in fact, since the beginning, is I have divided the modalities in 9 sections. 9 major sections. I will give you now these 9 sections, which are quite easy to remember, I think, especially if you would do like me, which is use them all the time. And the aim of having it divided in 9 sections is that you more easily remember straight away, well, this section of modalities, oh, may there be a question I may ask about this? It's a headache, oh yes, so I may ask about this. It's a backache, so I may ask about this, okay? So it's just to gear up and be ready to ask the right questions, the relevant questions. Now, what are these 9 sections? First section is about time. No, okay, we have time as a out of the modalities almost, especially in the Kantian qualification of symptoms, yes. So we have time as an explanation of when. When has the symptom happened? But the when is not only the clock. It's not only 4 a.m., p.m. It is also the day or the week or the month. People have symptoms in September. Symptoms in September. We have in repertory, in the materia medica, we know remedies with problems in September, in August, year after year. Or it may be the season. Or it may be periodicity. So just remember that the time when covers more than just the hours on the watch. Time, in addition, covers still another very interesting part of symptoms, the section of symptoms, which is symptoms related to each other. And then we have 4 ways a symptom can relate to each other. One you know already, we have mentioned, it is the concomitant. Basically, it means one symptom is accompanied by another one at the same time. It's peculiar that they are accompanying them each other. This in the repertory, as you know, has been transcribed many times already as patati accompanied by. You have head pain accompanied by diarrhea, head pain accompanied by constipation, head pain accompanied by vertigo, etc., etc. You can see all those examples. Now, apart from 2 symptoms at the same time, they can be alternating. Now, if we hear this, it's very interesting again. Backache, abdomen, pain head, pain abdomen, pain head, pain abdomen. If I don't have the pain in the head, I have the pain in the abdomen. Oh, we open our ears. And this may be a question. Is there an alternation between these symptoms? Be aware of it. The third one is that one symptom is gone and then the other comes, not to alternate, but just to stay. It's followed by, doctor, I come to you, I have this bitter taste in my mouth, it's now ongoing for a few days, and I know from my previous experience that if this goes on for 1 or 2 weeks, I'm getting into my depression. In fact, this has been starting already, because this bitter taste is announcing a very bad spell of depression. It's bitter taste followed by depression. We hear this information, it's golden information for us, okay? And then the fourth one is
something happening at a certain time which triggers off the problems. Ailments from, never well since, whatever you want to call it. So since taking a bath in the river at the seaside on the, what is the date, on the 19th of March, I have my rheumatism and this is what cripples me and I cannot come to the States in November, okay? So ailments from. Relation in time. We should be aware of time, not only when, but also of time relationship in time between symptoms. This is number one. The second section of modalities, which we may want to evoke, is everything related to sleep and waking. Now, any modalities, you know, it is aggravate amel, basically these two. So it is during sleep, before sleep, after sleep, falling asleep. It is on waking, after waking, all kind of changes. It's also the position of sleep, which may be interesting. So you just think, is there anything I want to know which is related to sleep or waking state? Then number three is motion and position. How are the complaints affected by any type of position? Sitting, standing, lying on a side, on the painful side, on the left side. How were they affected by any motion? Stepping, walking, running, ascending stairs, descending stairs, rising from a chair, squatting, kneeling, turning the body in bed, turning the head, moving the eyes. Any kind of motion, any position, any change you can think of. This group of modalities. Number four, I like to remember as temperature. Anything cold or warm. Basically, we have cold or warm, and we have agraf amel. So basically, we have four categories. In addition, one other category, which is the change of temperature. You know, like Rumex, you go from cold to warm or warm to cold. It's just a change which makes, just triggers the sneezing, etc. But then the cold or type of cold, which may affect the symptom, it may be all types. It may be the cold bath, it may be the cold application, it may be the cold weather, it may be sitting on a cold stone, etc., etc. But just anything with temperature is number four. Then number five is weather. There we seem to have a limited number of possibilities, dry or wet, warm or cold, combinations thereof. No, we have many more. We have frosty weather, snow weather, we have the change of weather again, we have the thunderstorms and lightning, we have the weather the open air goes there, we have the seaside, etc., etc. So weather, climate in a very broad way. Okay. Number six, I like to think of as perspiration, chill, and fever. In acute diseases especially, you see sometimes kids or persons have more fever in the evening. And then they tell you, when the fever comes on, I start feeling nausea. Nausea, fever during. This is interesting. Chill during. Perspiration during. Deep complaints come on when these changes of temperature or change of perspiration come on. Number seven is anything related to drinking or eating. Of course, the act of drinking and eating, which includes everything like swallowing or biting or chewing. But then again, just drinking solids as opposed to swallowing, empty swallowing as they term it, saliva or eating, etc. And then all the types of food, all the drinks, which can be desire, aggravate, amel, and aversion. So seven, the whole gastronomic area. Then number eight is stool and urine, basically before, during, and after. But you can be precise at the beginning, at the end, diarrheic stool, normal stool, etc. And then number nine, at last, the last category of modalities, is anything related to the sexual functioning. Now, in general speaking, we have sexual excitement, coition, before, during, after, whatever. And then, of course, for the female, we have a separate chapter with the menstrual activities before, during, after, the ovulation, and of course the menopause, the puberty, menopause. Yeah, puberty goes for both of them, of course. So you have these 9 categories of modalities, and you will find a few, you know, you will find a few that do not fit in these 9 categories. But in fact, if you just remember these 9 keywords, you will kind of remember a myriad of possibilities just by going over these 9. And so this is the purpose, my purpose of dividing it into 9 sections of modalities. Okay?
Frederick, thank you. That was a wonderful description of a lot of different ideas for helping to remember what to ask for during an intake. I think that was quite useful, and I think it certainly illustrates how meticulous and organized you are with regards to the information that you teach. I obviously have many more questions that I'd like to ask you, but I see that we're running short on time, so I am going to open it up to the general audience. Let me remind people that Dr. Shoyans, the editor of Synthesis, a world-renowned teacher, will be coming to North America October and November of next year, October 21st and 22nd. He will be in New York City. October 28th and 29th, he'll be in Portland, Oregon. And then November 4th, he will be the keynote speaker at the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy Conference in Monterey, California. So his seminars have been getting rave reviews. People who have gone to Greece and studied with Frederick or various places in Europe or Asia have been just raving about how clear his information is and how practically useful it is in whether you're studying or already a seasoned practitioner. So let me recommend that if you want more information, that you call us at 760-727-7090. That's 760-727-7090. Again, Dr. Shoyans will be coming to North America October and November of next year. Frederick, thank you again. Let me open it up to the general audience let them ask you some questions. But thank you for doing a wonderful job.
I do have a question.
Go ahead.
My question actually has to do with the modalities that we just talked about.
Modality, yes?
Yes. I've noticed that the 9 sections that you have divided into don't really touch on any of the mental or emotional symptoms, such as how do they react to anger or sadness or that type of thing. Do you include that in your practice when you do a interview?
Yes. In fact, I'm not aware if this has been written in the invitation to this teleconference, but I have imagined this teleconference, this topic, as 2 parts. And the second part will be about how to be aware of the possible interesting types of information on a mental level. So you should consider that in this first teleconference I focused on these 6 types of information with the 9 sets of modalities, which are useful for the physical complaints and not at all on the mental complaints, because this is going to be the topic of the second teleconference.
Frederick, thank you for reminding me, and for those of you who are on the call, we will have a part 2 to this call. I don't believe we have a date yet, but we will let you know as soon as the part 2 is scheduled. I think we have time for one more question, so let me open it up for the lines.
Excuse me, can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
On the time, do you account for the change in times, just like summertime? Do you take that into account?
Yes, this is a very interesting topic. So someone has asthma at 4 a.m. in the night, and then the time changes to summertime. What shall we take? Well, it is most interesting. I have a number of patients where I have been observing it. These patients, they change, and after some weeks, they are again at 4 a.m. So what is the logic, or what is happening, in fact? The time of the complaints is the time of the person's watch. Because people start to live along their biology. Their chronobiology starts to live along the watch. And it's noon, it's 12 p.m., you see. And when they have complaints, say like they would speak like a podium, it would start 4 p.m. It will be 4 p.m. whatever time zone they are, and whether it's winter time or summer time, it will be 4 p.m. because in fact the 4 p.m. that is relevant is the 4 p.m. of their watch.
Yeah, very interesting.
I have a question for Dr. Shorin. I would like to have the 9 types of modalities so that I can write them down. Would you please repeat that?
No, he doesn't have time right now to repeat those 9. What we can do is maybe we can post them next to the call, so when you go to the website to listen to them, you'll have a document with those items.
I may have given a lot of explanation and clarification and justification, etc. But basically, my schedule, which I have in my mind and which I use all the time and which has become so practical for me because I use it all the time, it is just the 6 words of Kent, STMELD, size, times, modalities, extensions, localizations, and description of pain. And therefore, the modalities, I have these 9 sections, which we will write down or write down the report of the call, as Kim is saying. So, in fact, I have only 15 sections. And when I listen to a patient, I'm hearing, did he say anything about these 15 sections? And this becomes very practical. Because I hear so often when patients are, like in the seminars I give, sometimes people interrogate, other people interrogate in public patients, they don't know what to ask anymore. But if you are aware of these 15 sections, you always know what to ask. See what I mean? I would like to invite everybody, if there are modalities or descriptions of pain or times or whatever, symptoms which you do not find in the repertory, can you please post them to me? Because I would like to address them at the teleconference. So to which email address can they send those questions?
No, we'll take care of that, Frederick. We'll ask them.
You can take care of that. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Frederick.
Thank you.
Very much.
Thank you, Frederick.
Bye-bye,
everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Hope to see
you.
Thanks, Kim.
Thank you. Bye.